in the rain.
We say what we say, we do what we feel, we gotta keep it real.
In the rain.
All about the craft of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning up in the rain room. Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want in the red room. We say what we say, we do what we feel. We gotta keep it real
in the red room.
All about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning. Up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Yeah, what's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, Lisa? 2016. Yeah. First of all, did you see Lisa Lee Jessup over here, her little shoulders going like this? Did you see her? Did you see her grooving?
Let me tell you what, she's special. She's a ginger, uh-huh. And she's a curly hair. And you know there's a curly hair mafia.
Two for one, right?
So it's like, she already gifted, all right? She already blessed.
True that, true that.
She's prospering already.
Exactly. So you know how we do it on The Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. See, you can cuss on my show.
Love it. Love it.
We can finally get her out. Look.
Hey, apologies to Netflix.
Oh, what happened?
Because Luke K dropped.
Yeah, did you?
And then it was like the server for Netflix stopped working.
What?
Because I know when I got back from HBO and it dropped,
it came out,
1 o'clock in the morning, I was watching at least the first half of the first episode before I have time to binge watch. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll sneak a little episode later. And I could not get on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah, it was Netflix Armageddon yesterday.
It was,
I didn't even know that. I didn't hear that. I was so busy.
Three hours now.
So, of course, we were saying it was because Luke Cage drop.
It sounds good, though,
that's
right?
That's the rumor.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
So you guys hear her. That's my girl, Lisa Bolakaja. We call her the street nerdist. Why we call you that?
Well, because a lot of times I can bring you things that's from the street.
Uh-huh. And what else?
And sometimes in an academic sense, though, it goes a little softer.
See how she code switches on you?
No, it's funny because I have to mention this. Shout out to HBO and also Geek Soul Brother, because Geek Soul Brother is the one that hooked me up with it to be able to go to the Westworld premiere at CAA Thursday. And I got to see the pilot and got to be on a panel to talk about science fiction and talk about that. And I'm excited because it was like I had parameters. Like they gave us little rules and things you could say and not say. So I was on good behavior.
You painted inside the lines.
I did. I stayed inside the lines and got to talk about, you know, the new show Westworld. It premieres this episode's gonna show up tomorrow, but premieres on Sundays on HBO, and I'm excited about it because it's dark.
Love
it's
that.
Sci-fi, you know, and they're not afraid to take chances. And it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the show pulls up. So I was excited to be able to talk my nerdy, geeky stuff and squee out. And I was sitting there. I was like, Hilly, you're going to kill me if I get up here and make a fool in front of these executives. But shout out to HBO and CAA and, of course, the wonderful cast of Westworld. So hodl ho.
That's what's up. That was up. So you guys know how we do it on The Rant Room. If you guys are grown, let's get it in. So we got my girl here.
Finally.
We've been talking about it for about two years.
Oh,
huh?
Years. I know. Yeah, and I was actually going to come on, and then a friend of mine came into town. Remember that?
That's right.
One of those.
Wait, now we keep coming in. She's not coming in. She's here.
I know. I was like, guess who I got coming in?
And I was like, we texted me. I'm like, I'm only going to believe it when I see it. It's like, she's coming.
Exactly.
Sure, she's coming. And she's here. Yay.
And shout out to Colin for setting that up,
too.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Such a guy.
They love him. So what's up, Lee Jessup?
All good on a Sunday morning. How are you?
You almost can't say her name without saying Lee Jessup, can you? She branded that shit.
I almost
want
to say DJ. DJ
Lee
Jessup.
Oh, yeah. DJ Jessup.
In the house.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
What a good way to spend a Sunday.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Definitely. Yes. So like I said, we've been trying to get you on for a while. For those people who don't know you, just give them a little blurb of who you are.
Sure thing. I'm a career coach for screenwriters, mm-hmm. so all screenwriters all the time came up in this industry. Don't
I like
know
that. All screenwriters
one.
All the time. I see
absolutely
that.
Absolutely nothing else. Mm-hmm. Came up in this industry, so don't know another one. Did my first feature as a production coordinator when I was 17. Dad's a mm-hmm. producer. Told me he'll never give me a job. I said, fuck you. Went and got my own.
Mm-hmm.
No nepotism.
Take that, Pops. Take that, Pops.
Mind you, Pops lives upstairs from me now, so we're all good.
Well, you know, it's all family.
The circle of love, okay, the circle girl.
Got lucky, placed the script when I was 23. Had it picked up by a big production company. William Morris was packaging it, and I quickly found out that I did not want to be a working writer.
Interesting.
Which was a great gift to me, because from there on, I went on to development. Mm-hmm. Then I went to run ScriptShark, which is folded.
And that's where I first was familiar with your name, was with ScriptShark.
Yep. Yeah. So I was at ScriptShark. I wanted to find some more sanity outside of the development world, because it just killed me to call writers and say, so sorry, we're pivoting, our slate is changing, your actor is in jail, and we can no longer be sure of him. Did have to make that call. And we're dropping the project.
We got to get his bail. We got to get his bail money. So
we got to take it out of your money.
So we'll talk to you.
We
soon.
Have to figure out where the gun is. Okay.
Exactly.
So yes, I went to ScriptShark for some sanity, but like kept seeing the thing that I saw in development, which was writers getting in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing this national business of screenwriting seminar that New York Times sponsored for me, went all over the country, and then people started finding me and saying, hey, can I talk to you for 5 minutes? Sure. And then a lady by the name of Kelly Annalons called me one day. She was like, can I book a session? And I was like, can you what?
Like, what's that?
Like, what do I pay you? I was like, okay. What? and that's how I started coaching a million years ago. Kelly, still a good friend. And just moved out to LA. Very proud of her.
Oh, yeah.
But started coaching officially. Was coaching unofficially for about 4 years where writers just found me. Mm-hmm. And then I said, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. Mm-hmm. There's no there because nobody else is doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's just talking to writers about career and strategy and planning and how do you do this and yada, yada. There's, you know, a lot of web stuff, some misinformation. I said, it's going to crash and burn because nobody's doing it. Evidence, nobody wants it. I quit ScriptShark. I went to do it full time, and in 2 months, I had a full roster.
Really?
Yeah, full time job, loving every second of it.
I'm not surprised that you have a hustle mentality, though. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, you know what I mean.
I take it as a compliment.
It's a grind, girl. It's a grind. You have a hustle mentality. Like, even in your delivery and how you talk, you're so sure. You know, of what it is you want and what you need. So I can see people being drawn to that and wanting to get information from you. You know what I mean? Somebody told me that the other day. They're like, there's a reason why you run the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, people listen to you. And I was like, they do, don't they?
Mm-hmm. No, listen, I love this industry. I know screenwriting. I love data, though. Like, so I love studying what's happening in the industry. I love the ebbs and flows of it. I love talking to people. For some reason, people have been kind to me all along, open up to me, talk to me. So I have friends in representation. I have friends in production that kind of keep me in the loop and keep me connected to what's happening so I can help my writers. I can study, you know, large swaths of writers and writerly behaviors and what's happening to them and trends and whatnot, because I get to work with all of these working writers, emerging writers, whatnot, and really kind of take the data and it's you know, granted, it's unofficial data, but it's effectively case studies and figure out what's happening, how people are breaking in, how are they getting working, what's the process of XYZ. And so been doing it full time for, 4 or 5 years now. It's awesome. It's the greatest job.
And I love the fact that here's what's interesting, what you just said. You said that you saw a need for something, and then but you didn't see anybody else doing it. And your first inclination was, oh, maybe it's not a good idea. But instead of like, oh, well, no one's doing it, I guess I won't do it, you just went and jumped in and did it anyway and found out there is a need. So
my whole point is no regrets.
Right.
Like, when I'm dying, when I'm in my deathbed, I never want to like look at my life and go, fuck, why didn't I try that? Like, I should have tried it. I would have been so happy.
Right.
Maybe I would have failed.
Right.
But that's my whole take on everything. Like, you just, no, you don't leave space for regrets.
Right. Definitely.
If you regret something, it's something accidental, something that deviated on you, whatever, but it's not something that was within your control. So, you know, I understand why more people don't do this, because you can't formulate a break, right?
No.
You can't say, follow these 3 steps and you'll have a screenwriting career.
Yeah. Right.
And I understand that to a lot of people, taking a look at it is like, shit, I'm going to have, you know, I can't just create a formula and then preach it for the next 12 years and make a living and write 17 books off of that, which is not knocking what anybody else is doing, specifically on the script front. And I think that on the craft front, you can really do that.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
With the dynamic industry that shifts and changes all the time, there is no formula. You have to think on your feet. You have to be, you know, just ready to go. And I'm a person who likes coming from a place of having to figure it out, being a little scared that I don't have all the information, so going out to get it, because that's when I'm at my best.
Sure. I mean, Lisa and I talk about it all the time, about how different it was back when we first started, you know. Like,
oh, the old school spec market.
Like back in 2000 or whatever, like when I first started writing, I was an actor before that. But how everything was on hard copy and everything was so different. There was no real internet. There was no, you know what I mean? It was just so not accessible. You had to go to the library, bitch. You had to you had to go to the bookstore, Samuel French or whatever.
Go to getting the Brads.
Yeah.
And going and getting things and having to get the
covers. Sold them at Kinko's and shit.
The long Brads.
Yes, the short Brads, the quarter one, and then getting like the cover pages, like the nice hard cover, so that if they read your script, it'll be Mac your page. It'll protect the cover, so the girls are ready. Like, I remember going to get those
Matt
patties.
Matt Yaron Wilson.
Yes.
We all know him.
And
he used to sponsor me a lot for different talking.
He's such a sweet man.
The nicest guy in the world.
For those of you guys who don't know, Matt Yaron did like the majority of script printing in L.A.
Just posters,
everything. Such a sweet, sweetheart of a man.
Well, speaking of the changes, let's talk about when you saw the need to come in and start. Because a lot of times we have... You know, we have coaches, things that help you, like, to pitch. You know, like I said, we have the classes for, you know, writing screenplays and stuff. We've got all the guru stuff. But let's break down for everybody on here to understand what it is that you do when you're coaching a writer to figure out what their brand is and what they're doing. Because a lot of people are thinking, yeah, we get coaches for everything else, but no one makes that concept that you need somebody for a career.
They don't get why you need one for a screenwriter. I'm like, bitch, this is probably the most important one.
Yeah, it's like
if you go to a financial planner to talk about your stocks and your bonds and figure out where you're going to be, it's like you never think about it as a writer, because all we think about is the end point. Like, I'm going to sell the script and be a rich bitch.
Correct.
You know? It's not like, well, while you're doing this, this is the business side. This is how you market yourself.
Sure.
Especially when you're learning about what your skill set is as a writer. Because not all writers are good at everything. Some writers are good at writing a certain type of writing, and they need to understand what their weaknesses are. So can you just kind of give our people out there to understand what it is that you help them do to become better writers?
Sure. So let's just have me start with saying that craft is key. You have to have a great script. Without a great script, you're not breaking in. Like, let's just say that. So all the time and energy that's put into that, absolutely, you have to do it. But because breaking in is not a linear thing, right? You write a script, you sell the script, you become a superstar. That doesn't exist today.
No.
Like, it really, it's 20 years in the making, 10 years in the making, 5 years in the making, if you're really fucking lucky. So it's figuring out how to get from here to there, because it used to be, you know, I remember years ago, I was on a panel with Brant Rose, the agent, this is like 10, 15 years ago, and he said to me, I get 10% of the money, therefore I do 10% of the work. Breaking in is not 10% of the work.
Oh, I
just
love
so
that.
You're clear.
Yeah.
And so what are those other 30 or 40 or 50% that a writer has to put in?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my job to help the writer figure out. So whether it's starting at the very beginning, looking at where you're at your best, figuring out what is it that you can write consistently and effectively to brand yourself. So if you're a TV writer, you can't have a one-hour drama, one-hour dramedy, and a half-hour comedy and say, like, here I am as a writer. Like, what are you? I don't know what you are. I don't understand what to do with you. And if I don't understand it, the agent won't, a manager won't, producer, unless they love your project and it's the one they've been dreaming of all their lives, which, I'm sorry, doesn't happen anymore. They're not going to know how to work with you. So it's, first of all, figuring out who you are as a writer, what's your writer's identity, supplementing it with everything that you need to know in that in that space. Because if you're a half-hour comedy writer, you don't just sit at home and write half-hour comedy. You have to go do sketch. You have to go do improv. You have to do, you know, IO.
And now you have to go shoot some shit.
Yeah, you have to do, you know, can you do a web series? Like, what can you do? How can you, do you have a really funny blog? What else do you need to be learning in the space? How do you build not only your brand in script, but your brand in your identity? Are you on Twitter? Are you cracking, you know, 140 character jokes? Like, what are you doing? How are you doing it? Learning the industry, figuring out what are the paths that are available to you. So if you're a TV writer, are you going to go for fellowships? Are you going to go for the assistant route? Are you going to try and, you know, sell a pilot, which is very much now what in kind of the film space, that the spec market died. We went to a packaging market. Well, guess what? We're in a packaging market for TV as well. Like, two years ago, we saw a time where everybody was like, ooh, pilots, new writer, don't care, let's buy them. Now it's like, who's on it.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. So exactly. It's kind of really figuring out what are your paths, how do you work towards them systematically, what's the support system that you've put into place, and from there on, building the writer's career with that in mind. So, you know, getting to a place where do you have the body of work, do you go to a rep, who do you go to first, manager, agent, who mm-hmm. are the managers that you should go to, what's a viable manager, what isn't, because, you know, there's a lot of fringe people in this mm-hmm. industry who are like, sure, I'll compose music, and I'll rep writers, and I'll do some stage design work, mm-hmm. and I'll, you know, and I'll manage you. Like, no, that's not an effective manager. What are the differences? Why are the differences? How do you work with them? Then once you're repped, how do you accelerate, because mm-hmm. it only gets tougher when you have an agent or a manager, and yeah. it's not an automatic. Yeah. Like,
because people kick back when they get an agent. Ooh, I got an agent.
No. Also this too. Also, because a lot of people, especially newbies, when you get your first agent, mm-hmm. a lot of times we're so happy to have that one agent or manager that we don't really take the time to figure out, is that agent or manager right for
yep.
you?
Correct.
And to be able to step away. Yep. A lot of times we hold on to these bad relationships.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't gonna never get no man. Yep. I'm gonna hold on to this one forever. And you realize you need to lay that toxic relationship. And I've seen it from a lot of our writer friends. Been like, oh, I've been with this manager, but they're not really doing anything. And I'm thinking, why aren't you? And they're like, well, I got a manager. And they're with a big name company. Yes. And I'm like,
it's exactly what you said. It's like, I'm home on a Saturday night,
right.
but I got a boyfriend,
right.
but I never see him.
Right. And if you had someone to coach you to tell you, like, no, you need to be a little bit more aggressive and assertive with your career.
Well, and the problem with bad representation or represent, it's not even bad reps. It's reps that are not either A, not effective, or B, not that interested in you because mm-hmm. they have
That's
big
the key.
Clients to tend to.
Right.
It makes you, it lulls you into complacency, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a manager, I have an agent, they're working for me. So you're like, I'm going to sit back because my man, like, it's subconscious, but writers mm-hmm. do this. Like, I'm gonna hang back. Like, no.
And then you find out your shit ain't been sent nowhere. Like,
exactly.
You say, exactly. like, wait, who, they had a new show, how come I didn't send my stuff?
Uh-huh.
I didn't send it out, sorry. Like,
yeah. When you think it's in your hands, you end up doing a lot more. It's figuring out what to do, and a lot of writers kind of go, I finished the script, I don't know what to do now, mm-hmm. so I'm going to go write the next script. Mm-hmm. Great. Then you have like 17 scripts. Mm-hmm. You come off like something's really wrong with you because you have 17 scripts. Ain't nobody seen them mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. People are like, either you're crazy or you have poor social skills.
Okay.
Neither one of them specifically good for this industry. So it's kind of figuring out, okay, you have 3-4 great scripts. You mm-hmm. vetted them. They're good. Like, you've worked with people in this industry, whether they're friends or consultants, and we can mm-hmm. talk back and forth mm-hmm. about whether one should use consultants or not forever. I'm in the standpoint that if you don't have a writer friend who's willing to look at your shit and give you notes, go to a reader, go to a consultant, go where you got to go to make your work great.
Right.
Once you have that, what do you do with that? And I work with writers all the way to like studio writers who are doing assignments mm-hmm. and there continue to be challenges. I find that there are more and more challenges the bigger you get. Mm-hmm. So somebody asked me once, I met with this guy who's a newbie who's coming mm-hmm. up, and he was like, I want to do this and I want to do that. I want to get a manager. And then, of course, we'll be done working together. And I said, sure. If that's how it works for you, sure. He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, 60% of my writers are repped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, why are they working with you? Because there are that many more challenges then. It's that much harder. There's that much more
work. Illusions of grandeur.
Yeah. And it's navigating the relationship and mm-hmm. understanding what to expect from your rep and what not. And when's the relationship working and when isn't it? And if you need to switch reps and, mm-hmm. you know, if you've faltered in the eye of your rep, and how do you repair those things? And what can you still do on your own? Because, again, they're taking 10% of the money.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they're doing 10% of the work. There's a lot of shit that you can do on your own.
Right.
So that's kind of the very large.
Yeah, and
that was great.
But you were going in. I like the fact, you know, talking about the newbie writers, and also, like you said, because a couple of the guests that have been coming in, and we've been talking about when you've already established writer,
mm-hmm.
and especially those who are coming in, and now with the new networks and the new things like Netflix and Hulu and all these other things, how are the established writers coming in and trying to rebrand themselves and figure out how to navigate? Because a lot of times we get in there and we think we're in, we're successful. And then the career is going on, and then you have these slumps, and, you know, established people need to know, okay, how do I reinvent myself too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I work with writers who've had huge successes and then stalled, or then, you know, their agent got, you know, J.J. Abrams, mm-hmm. so they're like, okay. I'm not JJ. I'm going to mm-hmm. hang out over here. Hello.
Right.
And like not wanting to really stir anything or piss anybody off or rock the boat or mm-hmm. whatnot. So not kicking and screaming, like, is the relationship working? Are you doing what you need to do? Correct. Are they doing what they need to do? Like, how do we make sure that everybody's showing up? And if they're not, how do we make changes?
Mm-hmm.
Change is really hard for people. Like, if you look at tarot cards, I'm not a big, you know, tarot card person, but the card for change is death. Like, come on.
That's real. That's real, okay?
Yeah, that's
real. Yeah, that's real.
But the people don't like change. Change is scary. Mm-hmm. And even whether it's the change of going outside of your room and starting to meet people and network and who should you be meeting and what contests you need to be submitting to and, you know, how to pitch and all of those things, all the way through to I'm a big working studio writer, but guess what? My manager hasn't talked to me in a year. But it's still taking 10%. Still taking, what do I do? Right. And how, you know, how does it not feed into my writerly insecurities that, you know, my manager knows something and I don't, that I'm not going to be working for a long time. So, you know, it's over. Like, how do I get that confidence? How do I move to another rep? How do I meet other reps? How do I take rejection? Because guess what? Rejection goes all the way up. You know, unless you're one of those 10 writers on the studio list that will be working from here to eternity. There's rejection the whole way through. So how do you handle it? How do you respond properly to it? Where do you unleash all of your shit?
I mean, it's like Lisa and I talk about it all the time, and I've spent my entire career outside of the system and I still work. Still do fine on money. Like all the, and there's ways to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it's about you finding the work for yourself.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? If you can do that, you'll be fine.
Listen, you know? Working as a writer, first of all, you got to be crafty. You got to be crafty. Nobody's going to be as invested in your career as you are ever.
Oh my God, can you say that one more time? Like, I've been trying to preach to the choir for like years.
No, are you kidding me? I remember.
She's crafty.
Okay, it's like, you got to invest in who? If you don't invest in you, who won't believe in you?
I remember I had a writer who sent a script, a working writer who sent a script to an EP on Mad Men, right? They refused, so I'll leave the EP nameless just to, you know, do them that little favor. But the writer comes back to me. And she's like, they just, you know, they're into it, but I just sense they don't love it. Like, they don't love it like I love it. Like, yeah, of course they're not going to fucking love it like you love it. Like, are you kidding me? Like, they have 17 others.
Right.
You have the one.
Right.
Like,
right.
Of course they're not going to love it the same way. Of course they're not going to invest the same way. Because of that, you have to be strategic and thoughtful and unemotional as much as you can in those communications to figure out how to move it forward. And the writer went, fuck you, and ultimately went completely blew up that relationship because the writer was emotional and like, you don't love it like I love it. Like, no, they don't.
And the moment you got that lip tremor, it's like, you know what? This meeting is over.
Oh, yeah.
Take this bottle of water and keep it moving, sister.
So yeah, but it's understanding, like, it's in your hands. You have the most to gain from it. Therefore, you have to be the smartest about it. Like, you can't put it all in somebody else's hands. You can't mismanage your own emotion. You can't expect others to do what you can do for your work. And you have to show up. If you don't show up for your work, ain't nobody else gonna.
That's right.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things. And writers, you know, can either, and this is not a blanket statement because I have tons of professional writers who know how to show up who are really great, but there, I've also seen writers who either show up really timid, I'll let whoever do the work and I'm going to sit back, and if they call me and tell me, then great, and if not, I'll just be sitting by the phone. Or show up overly powerful. Here's what it has to be. Here's how
they're
it
doing,
you know,
doing extras.
Right. Yeah, they're dictating other people's jobs, and it's about finding that balance. And like you said, like understanding what your manager will do for you and won't do for you. Understanding that about your agent. Is it a relationship that's going to work? A production company. What are they expecting from you? Are you going to give it? Like, are you comfortable with that? When do you invest? When do you not invest time? When do you not work for free? When do you work for free? Like making all of those decisions. You have to think about it. It can't all be gut.
Definitely.
It just can't.
Well, it's like the show I'm working on now, the showrunner brought in all the writers, but I have to work everybody's deals and whatever. So I've been on the phone with everybody's agents and stuff like that. So it's been really interesting talking to them and seeing the ones that are like, well, whatever you guys want to do. And then the other ones were like, okay, well, I want to make sure that she gets this certain credit and that she blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I like this dude. I might call this motherfucker when I'm done. You know what I mean? But you can tell the ones who really care.
Oh, yeah.
Who are like, hey, you said you were going to call me at 3. It's now 4.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, no, but that, I mean, like, to me, that's professional. But then you have the ones who are like, it's my first script and this company is going to produce it. And I also want to direct and I want a producer's credit. And you take a step back and you say, what value do you bring to it as a producer? You've never produced anything. You've never done a short. Like, what is your value add in this situation? Do you have the right to ask for it on a first feature.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Like when you're getting writer credit, and by the way, you're directing it, oh, now you want to produce it? Back off.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, people
but
say...
But they think they automatically should get it because...
Yeah.
But, you know. But then you talk to real producers who are like, I can't come to this project because I have no value to bring to it.
Correct.
And you understand that's the conversation. But, you know, like writers send their scripts out... And then they'll call me and I'll say, oh, I haven't followed up in a while. What's a while? 6 months. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, if you sent your child somewhere, would you not check that he got there safely?
Correct. 6 months later, did my baby show up?
Is he still there? I thought he was coming out.
He might be a little taller now, right?
Little, yes.
Yeah, no, but like, that's the professional thing to do.
Right.
You follow up on your work. Like, you give yourself a timetable, you do it strategically, but you follow up. So you're supposed to have a call with somebody. Like you said, you don't like just, oh, they never called. Maybe they'll call tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here and wait. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, like 2 years later, there's a long beard and, you know, starvation going on, but they're sitting on the
And they forget you.
And they forget.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But like you follow up. You're like, hey, we're supposed to be on at 3:00. I see you're not on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if today's not good, let me know when we can reschedule, as opposed to just, okay.
Yeah.
Like this.
Well, they didn't call, so they must not be interested.
Yeah.
No, they probably just never got to it yet.
Yeah.
Something else got in the way,
whatever.
Let them tell you, you know what, this is really not the time to do this call. I'll get back to you some other time if I have the time. Like, let them say it. I'll let you off the hook. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times, writers who are just coming out, who haven't kind of gotten into the regiment of being a working writer and how to function in the industry, have this thing of, you know, just holding out for hope.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
They haven't called, but they haven't said they don't want to talk, so let's just wait. Like, don't hold out for hope. There's so many avenues out there. I was talking to one of my clients last week who has a feature that's financed, that's going out, and somebody reached out to them, to her and her producing partner. I said, I can get you with a distributor with Lifetime. You have to sign the deal this week.
Mm.
Feature's not done.
Mm.
They don't know what they have. What is Lifetime offering? And this is not Lifetime, mind you. This is a middle person. I was like, hold on. Why are we just saying, yes, let's go for it? What is this company offering? What do you have and what is its value?
Right.
As opposed to, oh, we got to take it because it's Lifetime and somebody offered me something, so I better say yes.
Right.
So it's really understanding strategically what's going to work for you, what isn't, understanding your own value, not overstating your own value. Like I had somebody email me once and say, I'm going to sell a script for $10 million. Well, guess what? That hasn't been done.
Has
it ever?
No.
No. Shane Blackman did it. Ain't nobody
ever? No, 4.5. But he was like, "That every script of mine is going to sell for 10, and that's just how it's going to be, and I'm going to rewrite the industry."
Okay, good luck with that.
God be with you.
Well, coming with that from that angle, what is the biggest mistake? You talk about writers being strategic. When they're – and just talk about newbies. When they come to you and say, hey, I need to work with you on this, what are the biggest blunders that you see, the mistakes that newbies are coming? When they come to you and say, I need some help, and you say, okay, so what have you been doing?
How much time do you have?
Because I need to know and take notes out there.
First of all, taking out a script that's not ready. That's the biggest mistake ever.
Write that down,
make
fam.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote it. I love it. My mom loves it. I'm taking it out. It's ready.
Mm-hmm.
Says who? Like, it has to be read by people who know the industry, who read scripts all the time today.
Mm-hmm.
Not people who like made movies 25 years ago. No disrespect to them.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are in the industry today who are aware of what's happening. So getting that script... great, because good just doesn't cut it. Like, good enough.
I mean, say that one more again.
Good don't cut it, okay?
How many times have you tried to tell people? Stuff can't just be good.
No, it's got to be great.
It's got to be great. It's got to be like...
It's got to be compelling.
Okay, it's got to be... I got to jump up and want to tell somebody, like, y'all, if y'all don't get this...
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what you see is it's just... And people think that that's good, and it's not.
No, people are like, oh, they'll see the potential in it. Either they see the potential or they don't. Like, fuck the potential. There's an industry word that I love, undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
The work has to be undeniable. Like, whether somebody responds to it emotionally or not, that is the only part that should be negotiable.
Yeah. Right.
I got it. I didn't get it. I connected with it. I didn't.
Right.
But the work is there.
Yeah.
Like, it's for me. It's not for me. That is the only conversation. But the work has to be undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
So taking out material before you've beat it up enough, before you've had enough people look at it to say, you know, I get it. The craft is great. It's effective. It's affected enough people. You have enough of a swath of people who read it to say it hit with, you know, 10 people read it. 4 were really affected by it emotionally. They got it. Everybody got the craft. I didn't get craft notes. Maybe I got character notes.
Right.
Maybe I got tonal notes. Those tend to be more subjective.
Sure.
So that's the first mistake. Second, going out without a clear brand of what you do. I was talking to one writer who, he was, you know, he was like, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm doing the other thing. And I was like, what is your brand? What is your core thing? He's like, well, can't I just be a writer?
You know what? God bless him, because you got to remember, we was like that too. I'm a writer.
We just did it. I'm the vice chair of the Writers Guild for the LGBT committee and for the Black committee. And we just did this like meet and greet thing with these like executives, whatever. So we had like a little 2-minute pitches. And I'd always sit there and I'd always let the person go ahead of me and I'd just listen to them. And then I'd start and I'd do my little spiel. But when I start talking about myself as a writer, I would always say, you know, like, horror is my love. Mm-hmm. However, I always find a way to add comedy through the fact that I like underdog stories. And it comes from the fact of me being a Black gay man. Mm-hmm. And yada, and everybody would sit up.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Just because like they're curiously. Getting it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What I'm telling you is, it doesn't matter what genre I write, I'm writing an underdog story. In some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
No, you're plugging into themes that are going Correct. To be permeating throughout your work, Correct. Which I think is incredibly effective. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I'm into. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I find we as just human beings, our nature is to look for best in field, right? That's what we look for. If you're getting married, you're going to have a big Italian wedding, you're not going to bring in an Indian caterer who made a good lasagna. Like, you're going to find the best Italian food you can fucking afford.
Definitely.
Same with architecture. You can't just be an architect. Like, either you design, you know, skyscrapers or luxury homes. Okay. Like, you don't do both.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's writers stopping to think that they're somehow being put in this unfair box that they'll never be able to break out of. First of all, you'll be able to break out later when you find success. But first, like, tell people how they're going to be selling you. Like, don't expect an agent or manager to figure it out, because if you can't serve it for them, they're not going to know what to do with you.
They're not going to be in the room with you pitching.
No.
Like, they can't be going, this writer's awesome. You need to hire them. Like, no, that's you, boo-boo. That's you.
Yeah, nobody calls them and says, like, oh, do you have a good writer?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hello, David Boxerbaum, do you have a good writer? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the call that he gets. The call that he gets is like, who do you have that's great with thrillers? Who do you have that's great with, you know, family dramas with, you know, with an edge? Like, those are the calls. So he's not going to go and say, oh, well, this guy's a great writer. He's done 17 things, but that's not one of them. But I'm guessing he can, because he does everything.
Yeah.
That's not the person he sends. He's going to send the ones like, oh my God, I have this great family script, totally edgy. You got to read this. I think this guy's perfect for you. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to work. So you have to create yourself, brand yourself for the industry rather than waiting for agents and managers to do it for you. Because the reality today is, you know, and that gets us into the next step, which is agents and managers, writers going,
right.
I wrote a script, I need an agent. First of all, you don't need an agent. You need a manager. Exactly. Second, you need a body of work. Third, is the script industry ready, right? Mm-hmm. So understanding what you need, understanding how to create yourself for them, so how to create the body of work that makes sense to them, how to learn to talk about yourself. Mm-hmm. What is your story? People will say, like, tell me about you. And you go, well...
Yeah, because a lot of times they focus in on the writing part, and they don't remember to cultivate the stuff that's going to get them to read the writing part of yourself.
You know, I interviewed Marcus Goerg from Heroes and Villains a couple of years ago now. They're good people. Mm-hmm. Good people. And he said to me something I thought was, I mean, he's super astute, as you guys know, to start with.
Sure.
But he said something to me. He said, as a writer, your first story is your own. So you better know how to tell that story.
That's right.
And I think that's so smart and so specific, because a lot of writers, like, tell me about yourself. They give you chronology.
Mm-hmm.
Chronology is not a story. It's not memorable.
True.
You know, you're going to have a lot of people with very similar stories. Yep. If you just go, here's where I went to school and here's where I went to college. And oops, I didn't go to college. So I did, you know, here's when I moved to LA.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. What is your story? What is your personal identity? That is your value add for writing assignment, for staffing on TV shows. What is this unique experience that you bring into your scripts and into any professional situation? So figuring that out, figuring out those stories beyond just what's on the page, because, you know, writers rail against the idea that this is a collaborative business, because writing is such a solitary practice. Mm-hmm. But the moment that you're done writing in solitude, you are collaborating. You are in, whether you're a TV writer in the room with a bunch of people like you're dealing with right now, or whether you are dealing with studio execs, with your development execs who are working with you on your feature, it's all collaborative. And that's when we lean on themes, right?
Right.
You write underdog stories. Mm-hmm. that has to speak to something that you've always felt, right?
In no matter what the genre is, that's what I connect. Yeah. That's my thing, no matter what.
So that those themes and those things that drive us end up permeating through our work and getting into conversations and being what we bring into writing assignments and writing, you know, writing in the room and our own script. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out how to talk about these things, how to be a, you know, not a complete working package by the time you get representation, but how to have a clear identity of who you are as a person and as a writer and the shit to back it up. So the scripts, the body of work, if you're a comedian, some, you know, some sketches, if you're a TV writer, some essays to go, like really figuring out how to create yourself honestly. So create implies that there's some duplicity here. There isn't. But how to project the most honest image of who you are as a person, as a writer, that makes you a compelling person for others to take a chance on and believe that I can get this person working. I can put this person in a room. Because the reality of it is that from the moment an agent or manager meets with you, and it doesn't matter if it's an official, like sit down in their office capacity or at a party, all they're thinking is, can I put them in front of somebody? Can I put them in a room and not be embarrassed? And it goes on and on to then development executives, showrunners, EPs, whatever. Can I put them in front of my next higher up and not go, oh, fuck, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, I had no idea.
People don't realize is like even on a show, like sometimes the execs come into the room to have a meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to make sure everybody in that room is going to be okay. And not say something
out
of pocket, like,
you know, motherfucker, when they're in the room, you just sit there quietly. You don't say shit. Let us handle our business.
Totally.
You be quiet. You know what I mean?
No, but writers like kind of, and I get it, like you sit, you write, you create, you put your heart and soul in it. The idea of selling is really off-putting. But the reality is that everybody's selling something to somebody in this industry.
Right.
So whether it's you selling yourself to an agent or manager selling you to their higher-ups or selling you to the buyers, the buyer is very rarely the actual buyer that can write the check, right? In TV, we have 49 individuals that can write a check. In features, we have less so in the studio world, more so in the indie world. But you're going to go through levels, right? So if you're going up for a writing assignment, you're doing the treatment. So you're going to pitch the CE, the creative executive, and then they're going to put you up in front of the, you know, the development executive. And then the development executive is going to put you up in front.
These are steps.
Exactly.
These are
the
steps
that you go through, and they're selling you up, and they're selling your project. And they have to feel like, okay, I'm comfortable with this person in the room. I'm comfortable with how they carry themselves, who they are, how they talk about themselves, all of those things, which can sound really daunting, but it's all doable. It's all in you. It's all just figuring out how to work that, how to not mold that again, because it sounds artificial, but how to bring those things out of
yourself. Well, how to bring out the best of you, right?
Exactly. How to show up. And the way that I look at it is, most anybody who's a writer or who's trying to become a writer, trying to break in, had some sort of a job before they were a writer, right? Most of us, fortunately or not, or unfortunately, not independently wealthy, had to get a job. Right. There's an interview process there that everybody had to do.
It's the same
It's the same thing.
This is more competitive for more money, for more rewards. So clearly, you're going to have to work a little harder.
Correct.
Yep. Now, on the flip side of that, the more experienced writers coming to you and trying to rebrand themselves, what are some of the things that you find them making mistakes doing? Because we do have professionals who listen to us and they're like, hey, I'm rebranding. I'm moving from maybe from film to TV, TV to film. You know, it's new to me. I've been around for a while, but this is brand new, and I need to figure out what my niche is.
Biggest mistake is not creating a lot more original work, kind of feeling like, well, my work is there. It should speak for itself.
Right.
Yeah. I haven't delivered a new script to my agent since 2008, but we're fine. No, we're fucking not.
Right,
TV writers tend to have a harder time because TV writers get in the fashion of getting paid for every script. So suddenly, what do you mean I have to write for free?
Correct.
You have to write for free.
Correct.
That's exactly what I mean.
And they get into the habit of, oh, I've been on the show for three seasons.
Yeah.
I know we're coming back next season. Why do I need to write a new script?
Yeah.
Instead of... they thought they were coming back, and they decided, fuck it, we're canceling you.
Look,
you
know what I mean? Some people find
now
out.
Now what?
Okay.
Now what?
Yeah, like, what is your writing sample? Like, every writer, you know, I have writers who are coming off of TV who are writing, I have a three-week hiatus. They're going to churn out a script in those 3 weeks. Granted, they're going to be outlining in the weeks and months leading up to it, so when they get to the page, they can bang that thing out in a week.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, they are constantly staying competitive. And I find that a lot of writers, I think that that's the best term for it, a lot of writers who are further, who are working writers, who are trying to figure out how to re-stimulate a career, how to become relevant again,
right,
just kind of go, oh, well, my agent's sending me out on this assignment and that assignment. I'm going to keep doing them until they fade away and until there's no more. And then ultimately don't create any of their own shit. So suddenly there's no more writing assignments. And they're sitting there going, I have nothing, and I, you know, I need six. If it's a feature, it can be 6 months or to a year to write a new feature. Mm-hmm. If it's a pilot, you know, usually less, but it can be easily four mm-hmm. to 6 months. So not staying on top of their career and expecting for it to just show up, mm-hmm. or expecting to succeed today on the merit of something that helped them in 2008.
And for mm-hmm. a lot of people, that's a hard adjustment, you know, because the industry has changed so much and things are mm-hmm. moving so quickly, and you have to be like, well, what's current? What do you have current? And like, we have a lot of people who are EPs and, you know, producers from like well-known shows. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And trying to be open and be fearless and embracing that change and reinventing yourself and figuring out what's the next move for me as a writer.
Well, yeah.
We were talking before we, off air, whatever, before we started taping, we were talking about how there are certain writers, we know who we're talking about, who have been around 20 years ago, they broke in.
Yep.
Right? And so their view of how this industry works is still locked into this pattern of how it's supposed to work. And but they don't realize we're in a time now, we talk about this all the time, where you have to be your own boss now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you mm-hmm. can't just go, oh, I got a great idea, I'm going to pitch it to the network. They're going to pay me to write a script.
Mm-mm.
Unless you're there.
Mm-mm.
We have to go, I need to write a script, package it, figure out who I can bring in, then go to the network. You need all these other elements. You have to bring elements.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
You can't just go because I'm somebody now.
Well, you have to remember, 20 years ago, you know, the height of the spec boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So writers, because material was moving so fast, because we didn't have internet, which was a big component part of it, because there was no way to create competition and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, or there isn't that way now that there was then, because now, you know, people are texting and emailing and tracking board and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You could get a spec out to market on a regular basis on a Tuesday and have it sell by Friday.
Sure.
And people were just, the studios were buying so quickly. Studios then, the majority of them, were not owned by corporations yet.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference from where we are today. Everybody but Disney is owned by a corporation. So there was a lot more eagerness for new material. Granted, all that was launched by the 88 strike,
mm-hmm.
where writers were sitting at home writing with nothing to do, mm-hmm. and suddenly flooded the market with all of this available material from mm-hmm. very high-profile writers.
Right.
But you had the luxury then of coming up with one script, right, that had a kernel of a good idea in it, having an agent take it out. Like, Jewel Ross talks about the fact that, you know, he took a script, his first script that he took to market sold in 2 weeks. Right.
It was a completely different time.
No, like, does it speak of Jewel Ross being the great Jewel Ross? Yes. But it also speaks to a completely different time in the industry where you can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when they were selling million-dollar scripts,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but then it was the one-and-done time, right? Mm-hmm. You could show up with a script, have it sell in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and you are done. You are mm-hmm. never working in this industry again, but you got mm-hmm. your $500,000, your $1 million, and you're good for mm-hmm. a little bit.
For a couple of years.
Today, we're mm-hmm. in a career stage. Like, it is completely different time. It takes much, much longer to break mm-hmm. in. Today, mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, I say 3 to 10 years. A lot of people tell me that I'm way too generous in that. I've seen it happen in 3 to 10. You know, we talk about somebody like Scotty Mullen that mm-hmm. was on your show, who managed to, you know, in 6 months,
mm-hmm.
go from Great American Pitch Fest.
Talk about a hustler.
Okay. Yeah, total hustler. Like, that dude is amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Just,
he's over there at Asylum.
Hey, Scotty.
Killing it. Right.
I know.
Now he's casting. I'm like, you better
call. He's on like fourth feature with them. He's unstoppable. Yes. He's unstoppable, and he's amazing. And he's a guy who was able to meet Asylum at Great American Pitch Fest in May and have them shoot the movie that, man, granted, they asked him to write for them, so it was mm-hmm. based on their concept, mm-hmm. in December.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've seen it happen that way. Those are the outliers.
Right.
He's definitely not an outlier.
Yes.
I've not seen others do it that fast, but I've mm-hmm. seen it done in 3 years.
Right.
Not often, but I've certainly seen it done.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you have to be in it to build a career,
correct,
not to write a script, you know, effectively play the lottery and come mm-hmm. out with some money and go away, because that's the one that you had. So
mm-hmm.
the industry looks to see that you are here to stay, that you have more than one idea, that you have more than one script that mm-hmm. you can execute again and again, that you can wash, rinse, repeat effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's where we really have been changing for a long time from the spec boom of the 90s. But the big change happened in 2008, right? The writer's strike, where writers won the battle, lost the war.
Yep.
TV blew up, not because of networks, but because of cable streamers, those mm-hmm. kind of those entities that really look to get in the game and understand there's a game to get into.
And new media content.
But, you know, with TV, it's a lot of, you know, the rich are getting richer. Yeah. In a sense that, yeah, a lot of people go, oh, there's so much more work in TV. I should go and write that. Bullshit. You know, yeah, there are more people that are in the WGA who are getting paid through television, $4,100 for 2014 versus $1,800 for features.
Okay with them stats,
okay.
But, told you, I love numbers.
Receipts.
Love data.
Receipts.
But there are a lot more people in features that work who are not WGA. Mm-hmm. First of all, you don't have that option in television. Mm-hmm. Secondly, television is much, much harder to break into because you are becoming part of a moving machine. And if you break that machine, that is a big machine to break.
Right.
You know, features are, they are a standalone business, right? Mm-hmm. They are startup versus corporate. So a feature is a startup business for that one feature and everything is in that one script.
Right.
For somebody to have a pilot purchase from them, the pilot is the beginning of, you know, a 100-episode vision. Like, I talked to somebody, last week, who was like, yeah, I have this idea for a pilot, but I don't want to move to L.A. Would they just buy the pilot for me? No! Just no!
Hallie, I'm not trying to come out there.
Yeah, it's like, it's the whole, like, you have to have a vision for a show. It's a much bigger thing. So, you know, the good news about TV is that if you do break in, you can sustain a lifelong career in there in a way that film tends to be a lot more evasive.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great analogy, you said, from startup.
Yeah, corporation. Corporate.
Now,
two different things.
You have a book coming out in March.
I do.
Tell me about the book.
I do.
I love that kind of stuff.
So my new book is called Breaking In, Tales from the Screenwriting Trenches. My passion, in case you guys missed it, is all about what it really takes to break in, right? Because my job is, you know, I love my working writers. So for those of you who are listening, this is not a knock against you. I love you and adore you. But, you know, there's a certain joy that you get from watching writers break in. Like right now I have an AFF finalist, two people up for Warner Brothers who are supposed to get the call next week. I'm literally not sleeping at night. Like, it's bad. So my passion is writers breaking in. That's really where my heart is, even though I love, love, love working with my pros. But they're just, they have different things to figure out, different challenges.
Right.
So, you know, I became more and more interested as I was doing this and figuring out how is breaking in different today? What does it actually take? Like, forget the story of I wrote a script, I sold the script, I became a millionaire. The rest is history about a house in the hills. It's all good. Like that doesn't happen in this industry today. So
didn't that happen to you, Lisa?
So breaking in is all about what it actually takes. So there are 40 interviews in the book, 16 with writers who broke in after 2008. So we're not talking about big, glamorous writers. We're talking about working writers who sold specs, who sold pilots, who are staffed on TV, who had web series, who got working, not won the lottery. There's a big difference there between getting working and winning the lottery. Yes. So there are 16 of those. There's 24 interviews with agents, managers, executives, program directors, spec market experts, just talking about the industry, where we are today, because I feel there's a shortage of information about where we are. How did we get here? What is the reality of it? Like, forget the dream. And, you know, maybe I tend to experience it more because people call me and say, I wrote a script. How do I sell it for $500,000? You know, I'm in Minneapolis and I've never been to LA. Nobody's ever read my script, but how do I sell it for $500,000? Right. I need you to help me do it. To which you go, oh, there's so many things wrong with this.
Okay.
I don't even know where to begin. So the book is really, the long answer is this book is really a boots on the ground study of what it actually takes, what is actually happening, and breaking in writers today. So what does it take to sell a spec? What are the steps to selling a spec if that happens? What are the steps to setting up a pilot? How does the room work? What are the fellowships that matter and that don't? What is the deal with contests? Everybody's like, should I spend money? Should I not? Where should I spend my money? All of those things. What, you know, how are agents and managers different? How do you work with them? What do they expect from you? All of those things. What are general meetings? How do you conduct yourself? What is developing your take? What is the reality of getting writing assignments? Because I certainly talk to people who are like, I want a contest. How do I get writing assignments now? You haven't been on a general, then you don't. So it's really an exploration of that.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
The book.
No, that's so needed because I was just thinking about that, like all the books and information that's come out, like more real-time information as it's changing. And I don't think I can think – can you even think of a new book? I can't even think of new books that are coming out now. There was the one that was talking about the new markets and things, but in terms of boots on the ground, coming in and doing it, you know, past the old days of the spec market.
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, I think there might be a few, but they're old. Like, they don't work anymore.
Yeah. They're old.
I hate to throw them under, but they kind of don't.
I mean, they're good for just, like, you know, a little tidbit. But in terms of, like,
there's some things in them, sure, that still matter.
Right.
But they're not current anymore.
Yeah, I wanted to do a study now. Yeah, correct. What does it take now? Yeah. And granted, this may mean that in 5 years I need to write a whole new one. And that's okay.
We'll deal with it at that time.
The fifth edition.
but you know, that's the reality of working in a very dynamic industry where mm-hmm. things shift and change, mm-hmm. and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think writers need to be informed about what's shifting and changing mm-hmm. and what's happening now.
Correct. Right.
Correct.
And having them get access to the information.
Yeah.
So hard.
Yeah, yeah. Yay. Yeah, and I leaned on a lot of agents and managers and producers and executives to, what are these people thinking? Like, mm-hmm. how are they mm-hmm. seeing this picture? As opposed to, don't just take it from me. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. I'm all over it, but don't just take it from me. Like, here's how the industry is responding. Here's what the industry has to say.
Well, take a little tidbit from that. Maybe one of the agents and managers that you talked to in the book, what's one of the tidbits they gave you as, like, if you could just tell these writers this, you would make my life so much easier. Is there any, like, little nugget?
Study the industry. Become a student of the game. Mm-hmm. Don't expect your reps or your producers to feed you information. You know, that's a really big thing. Mm-hmm. Don't make a plan B. Like, you can't be a weekend warrior writer. Mm-hmm. It has to be your thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has to be something mm-hmm. that you are in it for the long haul, and if it's okay, not this script, it's the next script. Uh-oh. What is
no, this is a funny shit. We meet writers all the time who are like, I'm going to give myself a year or two God. Or some shit. We got to talk about those motherfuckers.
Then don't. Just
and then don't.
I talked to one manager. This is in the book. I talked to one manager who told me that she sat down with a writer she was thinking about repping, mm-hmm. and she sat down with a writer. They met at a bar, and the bar mm-hmm. the writer said to her, "I'm giving this 2 years, and then I'm out." And she was like, "Well, then I'm out right now. I'm out." And the meeting was over.
The meeting was over.
Yeah, like damn. This is not a joke. This yeah. is it takes.
This is real shit.
It takes that time, like in 2 years with a manager. It mm-hmm. takes that time sometimes right. to get to a script that the manager feels like this is the undeniable
correct.
Script we've been waiting for.
Right. So you're building after, that relationship.
Yeah,
that
right.
Like, they're not saying, I'm betting on you for a year and then I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to say the same. I'm in it for what it's going to take.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not saying I'm going to do it for a year and then I'm going to go get my teaching degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either see, you really, really want this or not.
Right. When I hear somebody say that, to me, that's entitlement. It's like, my script is so good, it's only going to take me this long. You know what I mean? Like, they have that thing about them.
And if they can't discover my greatness, you know what? I'm gone.
Which reminds me, I went to lunch last Saturday with some writers. Younger writers. Well, actually, they're about my age, but they're younger.
Younger in their writer years.
Younger in their writer years. They've been writing, but they haven't done anything that's yeah. anything. So they wrote a script similar to another script that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he sat there. One of the guys sat there. They're probably going to hear this episode. Whatever. One of the guys, I don't give a fuck. One of the guys was sitting there, and he basically was telling me, you know, well, they came out with that movie. You know, I don't think it was as good as mine. And he had that thing. And I just sat there quietly listening, and he just was going in about they made this, and my script was so much better, and I had this. And they'd even talk about this, and it's based on a real story. They right. didn't have this. They didn't have that.
Yeah, but the movie and was done, so.
And I sat there, yeah. and I said, let me tell you a quick story. In essence, what I told him was, I used to always go to the coffee shop in West Hollywood before I ever had offices or anything. And I'd sit at the coffee shop with Lance Black, Brian Singer, all these cats, right? The fucking Gay Mafia. And we'd all be sitting there. We'd all be talking about whatever. And I remember Lance was writing Milk. And I remember when I first time I asked him, and he said this story many times. This isn't my own story.
Yeah.
And he said this. He says, I said, why are you writing Milk? There's like three other scripts on Milk. And he says, so confidently, he says, yeah, but I don't think anybody's going to do it like I'm going to do it. There was no attitude. It was just like, yeah, but I kind of got to do it kind of a
yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said this, and he says, you got to be first. Like, they still haven't done it. They're in yeah. development.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Now, we know what happened, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
And what that taught me was, no matter what script I write, and you know I write some scripts
right.
that other people are talking about writing,
right, right.
even the Black Wall Street,
right,
you know,
right.
three or four other people right. talking about doing it.
Right.
And so my thing is to be first. You be first, and even if it doesn't work, I got a badass sample or something.
Yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was telling them that. I was like, you need to take that negative energy that you're giving me. You didn't have to feel it. But all I'm feeling is entitlement.
Right, yep. right.
And you haven't even done anything yet.
No, right, listen, you right. can see it on much bigger scales, like Bad Moms that came out mm-hmm. the summer that was a huge hit. Well, mm-hmm. guess what? Adam Shankman had Mean Moms
right.
that he's been developing for 3 years, yeah. 4 years, waiting yeah. on Jennifer Aniston.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? that project just got a hit, just got a big, and Adam Shankman and Jennifer Aniston, by all means, are bigger, better, larger, you know, not, you know, not in terms of quality, just in terms of what they get paid. But that project, my guess is not going to go right away. They're going to have to hold off for a few years because Bad Moms just came out and was a freaking hit that took the summer. So you got to be first.
Got to be first. And it just takes the pressure off you, to me. You know, you're going to always write something that's in the fucking ether or whatever they call
everybody's
it.
And I think that's hard for a lot of writers, especially newbies, to think that, because they think that this no one else could be possibly writing this. And I'm like, you'd be surprised at how many stories.
It's called The Zeitgeist.
It is a Zeitgeist, you know, and if other people are writing it, this is what you should take from it. Instead of being like, well, you should take, like, hey, then I kind of know what I'm talking about when I think something has potential and I think it's a good story. Wow, other people think it's great too, so that should give you an incentive, like, wow, I can capture some great ideas, I kind of know what works and what doesn't. Go with that, as opposed to, well, they're making it too, as I'm telling myself this.
Well, you just had a big one.
But this is like this is the second go around. This is like, I mean, Catherine Zeta-Jones had some stuff going on years ago. So it happens, and you just have to be like, you got to be first. You got
to
be first.
No, but like the other side of it is that you have to understand, I work with writers, like I work with one writer who just did the Universal Feature Fellowship last year, is now with WME, with Circle of Confusion. Like big things are happening for him.
He's Chandis?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I figured.
Love Chandis.
We know. We love these Chandis.
Love Chandis. Yeah. No, but he's one of those who's been working at it, who's such a hard worker, such a talented writer, been out here since, I think, 2008, came out right before the strike. Nobody's looking at Chandis and saying, oh, well, he's been out here since 2008. No. Everybody's like, oh, my God, isn't this awesome? Look at what's happening to Chandis. Because we all know the people who've been out here for 20 years who are just breaking out.
Putting in work.
And and it's fine. Like, this is what it takes. I think there's this perception of, like, oh, I'll put in a year, and if I didn't break, then they didn't recognize my genius. No, you didn't recognize how this thing works. Like, Chandis is one of these great examples of what it really takes. Like, hard work, consistent growth, consistent forward movement.
Beast of a writer.
Beast, amazing writer, super talented, unrelenting, unforgiving of himself, right? He's going to drive himself and ask the most of himself. And, you know, he wakes up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning every day to write before his girls, before his kids wake up.
You got
to
want it.
Yeah. You got to sacrifice. You got to want it. And you can't put a time limit on it. Like, if this is what you want, then you go for it. And if you can't put yourself in it that much, then don't go for it, because it's too fucking hard.
Oh my God,
that's what's up.
Giving us some game here, Miss Lee.
I'm
look at you.
I don't know if I want to go.
Okay,
no more. She kind of dropped.
She's like
the bomb.
Dropped it like.
Right out. Okay.
And my drop. Can you say the name of the book so people know one more time?
Sure.
So
the book that's coming out is called Breaking In: Tales from the Screenwriting Trenches. It's coming out March 8th is the date I have from the publisher.
2017.
There'll be more information on my site, which is leejessup.com.
You on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, Leezy Jessup.
Okay, Leezy.
Are you a Twitter fiend? Or are you just kind
she'd
of
be
like,
on there a little
I'm
bit?
There. Yeah. I'm there. I hang out. Yeah. Honestly, most of my days, and this is where I'm really fucking lucky, are spent with writers.
Yeah.
Like morning till night. I start my Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I start at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Aww,
Lee, if you have any like kick-ass success stories, let me know. We'll have them on the show.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know
what I mean? Yes,
absolutely.
I will definitely be sending some people 80,000
listeners.
Yeah, because
you know,
listen, we want, you know, working right people who are doing it, and to give our audience, like, this is what it is.
I'll send you a whole slew of names of writers who just broke in, are breaking in, because my passion is, what does it really take? What are the real stories? What were the real experiences? Like, forget this. I wrote a script, and then I got all this money for it, and it's definitely been great. I hate that shit. It drives me fucking crazy.
Cool. Well, we shouted out Scotty Mullins, so we got to shout out April Shee. Also,
the amazing April Shee who just got with representation.
Yes,
very
she
proud
did.
Of her.
Go ahead,
and
April.
She promoted you on that.
Oh,
she said,
she?
I followed what Lee told me to do. And the shit worked. I said, go ahead.
No, but here's the thing.
Can we tell them?
Yeah, absolutely. April is an amazingly talented writer, comedy, half-hour comedy writer, who also...
She was a producer with me on the last project.
Who also does sketch and, you know, does all the stuff that a half-hour comedy writer should be doing, like taking classes and doing all of that. And she was a top three-er in Final Draft a couple years ago. And from there, a few managers got in touch with them. And ultimately, she didn't sign with any of them. I can't remember if she was top three. Yeah, she was top three. But, you know, a few of them kept an open door with her. Mm-hmm. So she kept reaching, like, writing a script, reaching out, like, doing what you gotta do. And so she finished this last script, and I was like, okay, let's get it out there. She's like, these people, they never get back to me. Do I have to? And I, like, she said she was gonna do it, and then she didn't. Like, one day I was like, okay, you're getting out your computer, you're doing it right now.
Yes.
2 weeks later, she was with a rep who had she's now with Daniel Vink, who's Good Fear Films, used to be Bender Spank.
Mm-hmm.
But Daniel told her, like, look, I've been watching you all these years that you're
what
sending
did I tell
me.
You? Okay, didn't I tell you people be watching?
Yeah,
didn't I tell you people
be watching?
Be watching people.
No, and he's like, yeah, you're consistent, you're hardworking, you're churning out work, and now you churned out this amazing, undeniable script. Like, he was calling her, hounding her.
He was, because we were in production.
Yeah,
and she couldn't answer the phone.
Yeah, he was.
She's like, this manager's agent's calling me, and I can't answer the phone. We're in the middle of whatever. And
he's like calling her Thursday night, calling her Friday morning when she was in a meeting with you. She's like stepping out. Like, he was, because he read the script. He knew this girl was hardworking. He learned this from watching her. He knew that she can be successful. He knew that she was diligent, that she was relentless, that she's going to keep at it.
Yeah.
And finally, he found the script, and he was. And now, like, I saw her last Wednesday. She has like 6 generals coming up.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch more.
She's gonna be on staff.
Her script just went out. Yes. Like, it's not like her script went out a year ago.
Right.
But this is a perfect example of what it actually takes.
Mm-hmm.
Writing, doing the work, getting it out there, staying on top of your network, not taking personally where they're not getting back to you, like figuring out how to get it back.
Having Lee tell you to open up your damn computer.
But that's, you keep them accountable. You make them do stuff they need to do. Right?
That's my job, to make sure they're doing everything that they can be doing for themselves, and then finding more things to do. And April and I were finding more things to do, people to reach out to, cold, and who to go after. And we're doing all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Vane got back to her, and another person that was a cold approach, he was cold, got back to her and said, I got to read you. And, you know, read her. She had 2 meetings with 2 different people and was signed within days because she was doing the work. This is what it fucking takes. And April is a beast. I mean, the woman just, she puts her head down and she does it, and she's unstoppable.
She knows how to do everything. I'm telling you, I produce with her.
No,
she
she's a smart, smart girl.
She's badass.
Yeah, and she's not going to stop. It doesn't matter when it's disappointing and when it sucks and when it's annoying and when it's whatever. And the thing was, she signed with Vang on a Wednesday. I saw her that day. We had a glass of wine, and guess what? She was right back to working after that. She was right back to producing a web series that she was working on. But, like, we stopped to have
that
glass of wine.
We wrapped, and she went right into the next thing. I was like, you go ahead,
girl. We had a glass of wine. We toasted. We celebrated. We talked about all the marketing emails she has to do to everybody
and
else.
She took a glass of wine, and she sat next to the computer.
And then she went to work on a web series. But that's April, and that's how you have to be. It's this is the job. Your job is to get to be a working writer, and that's how she treats it. So. Amazing.
Cool.
Awesome.
Well, this is going to drop tomorrow.
Oh,
because
wow.
Because it's you. See?
Because it's you. I'm a lucky girl. So many friends.
Exactly. Where are you at, Lisa Cole?
Hey, you can always find me on Twitter, because you know I'm a Twitter fiend. And especially all the new shows are back on and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And you know The Walking Dead's coming back pretty soon.
Uh-huh.
So we get to find out that Michonne is going
to
live.
Maybe next week we'll talk about Luke Cage, then. We'll have to get
Luke Cage. Also, you can find me on Bitch Flicks. You can find me every Saturday night. Well, not every, because sometimes I'm gone and writing or doing something. But usually you find me with Geek Soul Brother or Black Girl Nerds whenever we're doing the Saturday Night Sci-Fi live tweets, so that's always exciting. And mostly Twitter.
Yes.
Twitter junkie. Twitter shows, head. You know, and
you gotta have your head.
Yes.
And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. I say Twitter like I'm cool. You can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Big shout out to all the top countries that are following us. Brazil still keeps being way up there. I'm always like,
who is in Brazil down there?
Yeah, but it's a lot of them bitches.
Come down, little cachaça, listening to a little Hilliard Guest.
Come down and
Brazil, Australia, Italy, France, of course, the UK. UK is always like number 3. Canada, I said Australia already. Yeah, China and Japan. Yeah, that's what's up. So we appreciate it, all y'all. You know how we do it on the Rant Room. So check it out, guys. Don't forget to follow us, to tweet us, to 5-star review us on iTunes. I always forget that. And
just
also
give them love in every way, because they deserve it and earn it.
And we're on Facebook, and I never promote that. I'm just horrible at that.
But you're busy.
But I got a new assistant now.
Oh, okay, good.
So, well, she's in the room, so I got to do and shit too at the same time. But I told her when we wrap, bitch, you're going to work with me. So, anyway, so you guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. join us for 2016. So on the show, we keep it real. Mm-hmm. We keep it opinionated. What? We keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao. Yeah.
In the rain, we say what we say. We do what we feel. We gotta keep it real. In the rain, all about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning. Up in the rain room. Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. In the red room, we say what we say, we do what we feel. We gotta keep it real. In the red room, all about the crap of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning. Up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Mm-hmm.